Welcome to the Sum of It All, Take Two podcast. I'm Audrey Mendeville, along with my colleague Mark Alcorn from the San Diego County Office of Education. And this season, we're revisiting an entire past season in each of our episodes, sharing what we think now, along with new resources, connections, and opportunities. Transcripts to our podcast are always available for you in the episode notes on your favorite platform. Today, we're revisiting season 6, Mathematizing Literature, when we read and discussed the book, Mathematizing Children's Literature, Sparking Connections, Joy and Wonder, by Allison Hintz and Anthony T. Smith. Super curious, Mark, what's something that's still resonating with you from that season?
Well, Audrey, this is going to seem a little bit out of left field, but I did notice as I went back through season 6, we had this short discussion around, is math alive or dead? Do you remember that?
Yeah, that's a good one.
Well, and I started thinking about that a little bit more in terms of this idea of mathematizing literature. And, you know, it just sort of helped me think about it a little bit more about how when we have kids engage in stories and we have them notice and wonder about things, it lends itself for it to be these unique things to come from these humans, right? Like these ideas that just spill from students that we would have never guessed. And it drives the discussion similar to like when we'd leave a question off of a problem context, right? So I think that kind of a phenomena, if you will, that happens in a classroom with a story, I think when we can do that and involve something around mathematics, I think it reinforces that math can be alive.
I appreciate you bringing this back. Like, this was a super interesting quote that popped up in the book. And I remember us like having a discussion around this idea. And I think you're right. Like, I think what we are really advocating for is looking for ways that we can show students that math is alive, that it's not dead. It's not something that's already been figured out. It's not someone else's math, but it's theirs. And they have the capacity to mold it and shape it and make it something of their own, right?
Right. Yeah, for sure. And, you know, this is also resonating with me because I've been engaged in work in this idea of transitional kindergarten, this place for four-year-olds to start school. It's almost like in California here, where we're starting a brand new grade, and it's going to be statewide within the next couple of years. And I think of this as just this exciting opportunity of how we can communicate to these youngest learners that we value their thinking. We want to know what they're thinking. And I'm just picturing this classroom with these four-year-olds engaging in mathematizing literature and them getting the message from the earliest age that we don't want them to just repeat stuff that we're saying, but we really want to know about their thinking and the things that are going on in their heads, not just guessing what's in our head. And I think that if we do that with those four-year-olds, it will encourage them to understand how they're really doing math. And again, that math is actually alive and they can be part of it. They can participate in it, right?
Yeah, I really appreciate that, Mark. You know, that season that we chatted about that, we also talked a little bit about like the network of educators that are in our students' lives. Mm-hmm. And I'm imagining this is true with four-year-olds in their spaces, but with secondary students, like I'm thinking of like park staff and community center volunteers and museum docents and librarians and even just other children. There are so many people that can share interesting contexts and stories with our students. And I'm particularly interested in how we like help to mathematize those, right? So like in some arenas, these folks that kind of live outside of the really formal education space are called informal educators. And I feel like there's like kind of two pieces here. One is like, how do I help leverage what's already there? So when folks are already talking about things that if we made like small additions to, similar to what happened with the books, right? Where we ask students to notice something mathematical.
Sure.
Like there would be something amazing. But then the second part is like, how do we like maybe imagine or help others reimagine what kind of math experiences we're really advocating for? And so like, I'm super curious, like it total secondary stance for just a moment. Like if we think about like the soccer club coach or the staff member at the library where all the kids head after school, or even maybe the closest coffee shop where the kids linger before getting picked up, like there's math in all of those spaces. How do we help them see it? How do we help those informal educators notice it or ask the question? And how do we help partner with them in a way that maybe changes math into this alive thing that you're discussing instead of the, what did they have the phrase like dreadful or dismal word problems? They have that
Right.
phrase in the book. So super curious about that.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because the dismal word problems are try are the feeble attempt of trying to bring math out into the world. When math is already in the world, we just have to help people mathematize it, almost like we're mathematizing the literature. So I think that I really like that idea of working with these folks that support our children outside of math spaces, because I think we've math has been kept in this formal place that we do math in a certain place, but it shouldn't be let out into the wild, right? So I think we need to let it out in the wild, and that's making me think about another thing we talked about in that season six is integrating content. And I think it's kind of related to what you were just talking about, because the people that support our students outside of math classrooms, they're engaging in math all the time in integrated fashion, as all of us are. My colleague and I are continuing to push for different ways to do this, so that it's not just in the math classroom. And so, one of the things that we're working on is thinking about how we might have an instructional routine that could have kids engage in math and science together. So I think that when we do that, when we think about a big idea and maybe an instructional routine like same and different, where that you're comparing and contrasting, then we can look for places where math and science in a particular grade level might actually coexist in the same type of routine or lesson. And so I think that's something for us to continue, and I know I'm going to continue to grapple with and find ways to support our students in seeing how math can be part of other things that they hadn't thought of before.
I really appreciate that, Mark. In the same way that this book and the season we're talking about, we're talking about how we leverage the books we're reading with math together. So super interesting. You know, another quote that really stuck with me is this one that says, "Practicing thinking like a mathematician within a story opens up opportunities to think like a mathematician in our everyday lives." And I really think about that, about how we provide informal spaces and stories that help our students to continue to build confidence in how they mathematize the world.
Yeah, you have me going back to that word formal and informal. I like how you brought that back up again, Audrey. Like, I really think the problem is math is always taught in formal spaces. Math is formal. But let's use ELA as a contrast, right? If I go pick up a book and I want to just curl up and read it, right? I don't necessarily have to think about what the theme is, all the specific story, literary elements. I could, but I don't have to just enjoy the story. So how do we make sure that math happens in informal spaces? And like, what are some of the benefits of that? Like, you know, and I think it all goes back to that, is math dead or alive? Because I think, what do you think about this, Audrey? I think that maybe math is more alive in the informal spaces than the formal spaces sometimes. What do you think?
Probably always, actually. Like, if you feel like it's someone else's math, if it feels formal in that space that it's someone else's, yeah, that's going to be really hard to, yeah, no, I think this is super interesting, Mark. I'm going to have to do some more thinking around it, but I think you're onto something here. You know, related to what you're talking about with like how you just curl up with a book and it can be very informal. This is something I'm rethinking since reading this book, which is that I have always thought that you needed to read books from like start to finish. And I remember when I first came out to the county office and someone said, "Well, I just read chapter 7 of that," or, "I just read chapter 3." I'm like, "Wait, you didn't read the whole book?" And they're like, "No, I bounced around." And like, I know it's not a law of nature. Like, I know that's possible, but it's like, I thought it was like a law of reading. Like, you had to start the book at the beginning and go to the end. And there were times when that's been challenged for me, and I've tried to read in other ways. But this book, the talking about mathematizing literature, several times they talked about what would happen if you started in a different space of the book, right? And had kids think about it differently. And so that's something I'm continuing to kind of rethink both in my own personal reading of books, but also how I introduce things to students. Like, does it always have to be at the beginning that you start, or is there another way to kind of think about that?
Yeah, that's super interesting. And I'm also thinking about that in terms of mathematics. You know, like what if you took that to math? Because what comes to mind with that is like, is it okay to not finish and not cl have complete closure on a math discussion that's around a particular idea? I know when I was a teacher, that was as I started to shift my instruction and to be more student-centered, that was the thing that scared me to death. What's going to happen if we leave something that's not completely resolved? Will kids go home and will crazy things happen? You know, so you know, I think that again takes me back to that formal informal space and that messy space of not reading a book cover to cover or not following a math problem cover to cover, maybe, right?
You know, Zach Champagne talked about this recently in an Ignite. I heard him, an Ignite talk I heard him give, and we can put the link in our show notes. But
Oh
yeah, and
yeah,
he also
cool.
wrote an article about it. But he talks about that he wants to give his students the trust and autonomy to know that it's okay to walk away from a math problem. And you know, like what you're describing, like I want, like if it's going to be alive and it's going to be theirs, they have to believe that they have the choice, that they can choose to engage in it and they can choose when not to engage in it, right? And that's again in that informal space of like when you're out and about and seeing math around you, you can choose how far to engage in that, and you can choose to turn that off if it's overwhelming or it's too much, and you need to focus on your directions of where you're going instead of on all the beautiful shapes that you're seeing around you, for
Right.
instance.
Oh yeah, that's a good point. Good point. Well, I have something else, Audrey, that as I was looking through season six I'm kind of rethinking and thinking more about. And it's this whole idea of when we have kids share their thinking, which is what is really encouraged in this book, when we're mathematizing literature, we're having lots of ideas coming from kids. How do we balance that with the purpose that we have in any individual lesson? So for example, like I'm going to plan a lesson around a particular piece of literature. I'm going to expect certain things to have happen. I have a goal. I have somewhere where I'm trying to arrive at by the end of the time. But my kids have these amazing things, this brilliance that they reveal as they share their thinking throughout the time. And so I don't think it's an either or, but I think it's important to acknowledge that messiness and that tension between valuing students' thinking and also us ensuring that we have a mathematical goal that we want to accomplish by the end of the lesson. So I'm just grappling with that a little bit. And what do you think about all that messiness idea?
Messy. It's messy.
Right.
I'm with you, Mark. Like, I think the more autonomy students have, the more you have to expect the messiness of it, because they're not all the same individuals. They're not robots. They weren't widgets that came off of some kind of manufacturing machine. Like, they are very intelligent, brilliant human beings that see the world differently than each other. And so, you know, as a secondary teacher, that's giving up the fact that your classes will not end at the same spot in a problem. And I hear what you're saying too about like it, you might not even finish the problem. You know, I think it's super interesting that most of our students don't know that math might take more than one day when they leave high school. You know, and at
Right.
elementary, there's often times where you let problems linger day after day after day, and you kind of come back to the same context. And in this book that, you know, the mathematizing literature, they come back to the same story on how many days over the
Oh,
course
that's
of
true.
like building a unit or a lesson, right? And we somehow get to the space of middle school and the bell schedules that happen, and we start to believe that everything has to be tied neatly in a bow when that bell rings.
Sure.
And we have to do it in the same way across all of the class periods so that the planning does not get out of hand for a teacher, right? And in trying to like diminish the messiness of it, like I think we diminish a lot of the autonomy for students, and we push it back into being, you know, that formalized mathematics. It's not there. It doesn't invite them into the conversation, right? Or we invite them only so far to say, like, that's enough. Like, you're about to veer off my plans. Like, hold on. So I think you have to expect some messiness here.
Yeah, and I think another, maybe a positive way to say the messiness is another word we use back in the season is playfulness. I just think that's so interesting to think about. And I think it goes back to me thinking about curly, the equivalent of curling up with a book. It seems to me that if there's some playfulness around a math problem, that that's something that, again, causes things to be less formal and for me to bring more of my unique perspective. And just one last point around this. I think the other thing that I think you talked about in season six was this idea of listening to students. And I think once we have shifted things to be student-centered around their ideas, it really pushes us to become a different kind of listener, because now we're not listening for, did you say what is in my head? Now I'm really listening to your idea and I need to make sense of this. And so I think that's a super important reminder whenever we get in front of students that when we shift this type of instruction, boy, we have to become different kinds of listeners, right?
Yeah. And that's again difficult because kids are as just as they are predictable, they are unpredictable. And sometimes you are just going to get totally floored by what they say. And you're going to think, I thought of every possible answer to this question, and I did not expect that. Now, kindergarten teachers would never expect that. They would always expect the unexpected. But, as the older our kids get, we're like, no, they're going to be predictable. We're going to know, and I like your take on that, that if we view that as playful, and we engage in that playfulness, how might that change how we approach it and think about it?
Yeah, true. Well, there's one other aha moment, Audrey, I had in season six. And I was thinking about two ideas that came from one of our other seasons, so Thinking Classroom season and Mathematizing Literature. And it seemed that the idea that was a connection between the two was, do you remember back in Thinking Classrooms where Peter Liljedahl had that idea of presenting a problem verbally? You remember that? And how the idea was that you didn't pass out the sheet of paper with the problem on or open to page 23. The idea was presented in a very informal way. He would prescribe that we would just talk. It's almost like a conversation. The problem became kind of like a conversation. And you and I currently have been involved in working with some educators. And we've been presenting some problems this way. And I think there's a lot of connection between the mathematizing literature work and the thinking classrooms work in this regard, because there's this idea of having these informal conversations about things that are mathematical in nature. And the thing that I found interesting about doing that with adults, Audrey, is that it really has seemed to change the atmosphere of in the environment of how people engage in conversations around math. Because I know since I've been in this job, when I engage in mathematics with adults, there's all sorts of reactions that come into play, usually based on whatever math trauma somebody might still be carrying. And I think just this idea of having a conversation about something that's like in a story format, I just wanted to bring out the fact that that reminded me of what Peter has talked about in chapter six of Thinking Classrooms. And it seems to have a lot of potential for students and for adults.
I really like that connection, Mark. I think that's a powerful one, both because it feels like the storytelling aspect of math too, but also that this informal space that you've been talking about and playfulness of math. Every time that we've given problems like this to different educators, folks at the end say, that didn't feel like math. Like, I'm
Right.
not sure we were doing math, which
Right.
always just shocks me. They'll say stuff like, well, we were just solving a problem or a puzzle together. Like there was something we were trying to figure out, and they've totally disassociated that with math. And so I think it's a super interesting space for us to help redefine that that is actually at the heart of mathematics, like solving problems, being curious if the puzzle works, wondering if there's structure inside of something that doesn't seem to have structure. All of those things are inherently mathematical. And so I'm curious about the ways we can leverage the story aspect of it and the informal aspect that you're talking about, similar to what happens when you're mathematizing literature to help maybe redefine mathematics for folks.
Yeah, for sure. You know, when you were talking, Audrey, I was thinking back to me being in the seat as an adult learner when math came in the room as an educator. And I think a lot of times what I was doing is I was this little, you know, movie was playing in my head of like, when have I seen a problem like that before? How did my teacher back then tell me how to solve it? And I think that was really, really the barrier that I think many of us maybe still encounter. So I love what you're saying about like really working toward this informal stance of how we as adults and students could enter into problems differently.
Yeah. So whether it's walking away from a math problem, whether it's thinking about the informal spaces of math, informal educators, how we maybe leverage them in a different way to really reach our students, there's a lot of takeaways from this book. So glad we had a chance to revisit it today on this episode.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Me too, Audrey. Thanks for joining us for this episode. In our next episode, we will chat about Season 7, Teaching Math to Multilingual Learners. Until then, send us a tweet with the hashtag SumMathChat. That's hashtag SumMathChat with your questions and thoughts. We'll keep the conversation going there. Until then, best wishes on sparking connections, joy, and wonder.